This is a Mortarbox Media podcast. For more podcasts and to learn how we can help you create your own, visit mortarboxmedia.com.
Welcome once again to Chill Filtered, the podcast where we drink whiskey so you don't have to. But you probably should. On today's episode, we're going to be drinking Abelor Abunad.
Nailed it.
It's a scotch.
Yep.
A single malt scotch.
Single malt Highland.
And it's going to be delicious. But before we get to that, let's take care of a little business. Thank you for listening. Please hit the subscribe button, leave a rating and a review for us on Apple Podcasts app or anywhere else that you can find us. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all that by searching Chill Filtered Podcast or just Chill Filtered. And then visit patreon.com/chillfiltered if you want to help us grow this podcast. That's all I've got for business. Here's the podcast. Cole, my dear good friend.
That's me.
We haven't seen each other in a little while because we recorded two episodes in quick succession.
It's been a while.
But how are you?
I'm good. It's not even mid-August. I'm enjoying...
By the time this comes out, it's just about mid-August.
Yeah, it'll be mid-August. Yeah. I'm enjoying the weather. I'm enjoying the... my peppers are producing. I'm excited.
You told me you just bought some wood chips
and, to a little grill.
Not to
smoke my peppers.
Smoke your peppers.
I rolled up like a cigarette and smoke it. No, I'm kidding.
That's right. Well, I'm excited. I don't like spicy stuff, but like because you're my dear friend, mm-hmm. I expect I will try some pepper
stuff. I'm only going to bring you the best of my crop.
That's what she said. hey, I want to recognize that we got some critiques this week.
Yeah.
To be honest, I'm really thankful for this person. Yeah. I just want to say thank you to Mike, who's a guy from Reddit, who went through and listened to all of our episodes of this podcast and gave us some really helpful critiques on what we're doing. A lot of stuff that we agreed with.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it it's like any kind of advice. You take what you need and discard what you don't want.
Or at least take it with a grain of salt.
Absolutely. Yeah. So listeners, just be aware, we are in the process of going through changes on the show. Mm-hmm. And I think overall there's some tightening up that needs to happen. Mm-hmm. And both Cole and I are aware of that. So things will be changing a little bit, but not...
A little bit at a time, too.
Yeah. It won't be this drastic, sudden change. Yeah. We would like to tighten up this first 10 to 15 minutes of us kind of talking. We are aware that a lot of you are listening because you want to hear about the whiskey. But at the same time, Cole and I want to have fun doing this. And as much fun as we have talking about whiskey, we also take this time to kind of catch up with each other and... I listen to podcasts, and part of the reason I do is to learn about the host and like feel like I kind of know them. So I know there are some of you out there who feel the same way. So, but like I said, we are kind of going through a process to kind of figure out what all is going to be happening and the tightening up, as it were. Yeah. But you said you're good.
Yeah, you.
Work is good.
Chugging along. I got one more or three more weeks.
I was going to say, you're pretty close to being done and then being back in school.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. My life is good. Bumps in the road sometimes.
Always.
And we get through them with the help of friends and family.
Straight up.
And so that's kind of where I am at this week. But no, life is good. Work is good. I was reminded this week that I have the best boss in the world.
That's cool.
She is somebody that I look up to and respect. And I think maybe it's the first time I've ever had a boss that I'm okay with them being my boss.
Yeah.
And don't think I could do this job better.
Yeah.
So, that has been really good this week. And, my other podcast, Madison Story Slam, we are back this weekend doing our live events.
And
I'm really excited about. I know you like that too. So that's where I'm at in life. You're at a good place in life.
Yeah.
What do you say we take a quick break and then we talk about the distillery that we've got the stuff
Absolutely.
From? All right. So here we go with a quick break. ¶¶ So on today's show, Cole, as you know, we are going to be drinking Abunad.
Yep.
Which always sounds Italian to me.
It's Gaelic.
Abunad. From,
it does sound Italian.
Yeah, because there's an Italian word that I believe is pronounced Abundande.
Ooh.
So it's kind of similar to that, but it's from the distillery Abalor.
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 Mm. And there might be some Scottish people out there that are like, no, it's a little bit off this.
Yeah, but we are never going to get these pronunciations right.
I mean, Scottish is a hard one, especially Gaelic, which is actually the name where Abunad is from.
I was reading something recently about... I was reading something on Reddit.
Deep.
And somebody said, you know, it's interesting that all of these Harry Potter, the house names in Hogwarts all sound like Scotches, they said.
Oh, and really?
Somebody else commented and said, well, Hogwarts is in Scotland, so it would make sense that the names would sound like Scotch.
I didn't know this.
I didn't either.
Yeah.
Not until today.
Yeah, I never really read any of those.
What?
I mean, I'm a bad reader. I'm a poor reader. I'm working on it.
I'm a bad reader.
I can't read good.
Well, you should go see the Center for People Who Can't Read Good and want to do other things, too.
Want to learn how to do other things good, too. Needs to be at least three times bigger, though.
Cole, what can you tell me just about Abalor? Just the distillery. What can you tell me?
So, well, let me ask you a question to answer your question. You ever heard of a Speyside whiskey?
No.
Do you know what that means?
A Speyside?
Yeah.
No.
You ever heard Jimmy Eat World Bleed American?
Sure.
Where he says, clear your mind with Speyside. And I always wondered what that was. And someone was like, hey, that's a wine. Not true, actually. It is a region of Scotland. And so two things about this whiskey. It is sort of a Speyside, but it's really a Highland. Really, in a lot of ways, they're similar. When they call a whiskey a Speyside, it's from the Spey region, and they get the water from the Spey River, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
But even on the bottle, it'll say it's from like the Speyside area, but it'll say very clearly Highland single malt Scotch whiskey. And so it's from the northern part of Scotland and, you know, the Highland area. And
the Highlander. I'm Duncan MacLeod from the Clan MacLeod.
I forgot about that.
I'm going to make you watch that show.
That would be great.
I'm going to make you do it.
Yeah. So I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Also, another lead in. Do you know, we talked about single malt in the Irish world. Do you think that might differ from the Scotch world?
I mean, just the fact that you're asking me that makes me think that it probably does, but I wouldn't assume so just outside of that question.
No. It is slightly different.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, like, a Scotch is always different. But
how is it different?
Well, so a Scotch, in order to be a single malt, there's a few things. Single part means that it needs to be part of one distillery. It can't be between two. Like, you can't produce it in one and then mix it from another. And then to be a Scotch, it needs to be aged. Did you know about how young a Scotch needs to be aged minimum?
No.
3 years, one day.
I was going to say 3 years.
You were really close.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I actually didn't know that. And
I didn't want to look like an idiot.
No, you're doing great. Actually, yeah. I've learned a lot even just researching Abalor, or the Abunad in this case. There were a few things that I'm like, wait a second, is that true? And I'll get to one of them in a second. But yeah, it needs to be aged at least 3 years in one day. It needs to be aged in oak cask, which is really the rules of Scotch to begin with. But to be a single malt, it needs to be 100% malted barley, and it needs to be in one single distillery. So single malt, it kind of sort of makes sense.
Yeah.
So I kind of like that. But one thing, and I'll dig to it really quick. Abunad has a really cool story to it, but in terms of like the mash bill.
Well, before we get to this particular whiskey, I want to talk just a little bit about the distillery.
Oh, bring it on.
So Abalor, from my research, has been a distillery since 1879, which is a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a long time. It was founded by James Fleming, if you know who that is.
Oh, yeah.
I don't. but it looks like now it's owned by, like, there's a parent company. Chivas Brothers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then they have a bunch of different bottlings that they do. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a 10, a 12, 15, 16,
that's right.
18, and a rare 30-year-old.
Ooh, that'd be amazing.
1970 vintage malt.
Ooh.
Which Wow. And then one of the main things that they do mention when you're talking about this distillery is Abunad.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that Abunad does not have an age statement.
It doesn't.
It does not have an age statement, but you just said it has to be aged at least 3 years in one day.
Yep. So it's got at least that for an age statement, but that's nothing in the Scotch world because everyone is aged that long.
Yeah. I mean, that's Scotch.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a ton. I didn't do a ton of research.
No,
so,
it's all
but
good.
But I just want to, you know, part of what we're trying to change is that we're talking about the distillery, not mm-hmm. just the whiskey.
Yeah.
But so it's an old distillery.
Oh, for sure.
You know, over 100 years old.
Yeah.
140 years or so
mm-hmm.
at this point. And, which means there's a lot of tradition there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then one thing again that we've heard critique on is not to be so hung up on tradition.
Mm-hmm.
However, I will say there's something to be said for tradition.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you've got let's just call it 150 years old, because it's getting close to that.
Yeah, seriously.
When you've got 150 years of tradition and people working on, producing a great product,
yeah,
you're probably going to end up with a great product.
You got to honor that.
And
you know?
So I'm pretty excited to taste this.
Yeah.
I know that we have had other stuff that comes from places that are, you know, around that age and such. But, that's Abelor in a very small nutshell.
Yeah.
But tell us a little bit more about the whiskey.
So it's kind of a good transition actually from the actual distillery. Do you know how this expression, well, I'll explain how was this expression, designed basically. So what had happened was in 1975, there were some people that were construction workers that were working at the Abelor distillery, and they were, you know, fixing up, like, you know, breaking down things and trying to build back up. And they actually came across what was a time capsule, basically.
Oh, really?
There was a bottle.
No way.
And guess what year it was from? It was from 1898.
You did not let me guess.
Oh, well, yeah, I should. But anyway, 1898, you were really close. And and so you were so close. But yeah, 1898. And at that point, you know, it's like 77 years old, which is crazy. I mean, not as a cask.
You know why I think I'm so suddenly, besides doing this podcast and the camaraderie mm-hmm. that is behind spirits.
Yeah.
Part of the reason that I'm so suddenly into whiskey is that I've always loved history.
Yeah.
I love it. I love reading history books. I'm not a big fiction reader.
Mm-hmm.
And so I usually am choosing autobiographies or historical books.
Yeah.
And, you know, all of these whiskeys and all of these distilleries, the ones that are old,
yeah,
have this history. And so I love, cool. like, I'm trying not to say the F word anymore because I don't think it's very classy.
Ooh.
On the podcast, I should say. To hear about a time capsule.
Yeah.
That's found with
a freaking time capsule.
Yeah. I mean, that is like super fascinating to me.
And I love
they find this
came across it. They didn't even like, they're like, well, we're going to open the time capsule in 77 years. No, they forgot about it. And they came across it.
It's like somebody didn't write down.
Oh yeah. Seriously.
Say like, oh, hey, remember we did this thing. Don't forget to look it up.
But it's so much cooler in that way. So here's what happened. The construction workers didn't tell anyone and they like polish off like 80% of it.
Oh, so it was a full bottle.
Yeah, it wasn't whiskey. Like a cask or anything. It was a.
I thought you were saying it was a bottle that had a recipe in it.
No, okay. No. It had a just a really old 1898.
And you said this was in the 70s?
Yes, 1975.
Okay.
And so.
So about a 100-year-old bottle of whiskey.
77. Yeah, but close. Rounded up.
I mean, let's just.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, they finish almost all of it, and then they decide to tell someone. And I'm like, are you kidding me? If they had finished it, I would have been so mad, like just out of indignation. But anyway, they
would
decided,
you have actually been mad?
If I had heard about that, I would be like, you just ruined
Here's
something
the thing,
of history.
But wouldn't there be something special about saying we polish this off?
There would be, but
I would appreciate it either way.
For sure.
Yeah.
It would be cool. So they bring it to the Abelor and they find out, they're like, this is crazy. Like the 77-year-old bottle basically. And they put it, or they basically do a bunch of chemical testing on it. And not so much that, but more so like taste testing. And they're like, we're going to
say how much like chemical.
Yeah, it's. I mean, you got to work with barrels.
1977.
Yeah, true.
Or whatever it was.
Yeah, and so what they do is they save it so they can basically recreate it, and that is this expression right here. The abenade was an attempt to recreate what that bottle tastes like, you know. So it's kind of cool, but it is a it's got a bunch of ages in it. It's got up to, they say it should be about 25 at the most, and a few ages in between.
Well, I'm sorry, what do you mean?
Yeah, that was my question too.
So I was just about to ask you. I know there's not an age statement on it, mm-hmm. but do we have? Are you telling me we have some semblance of a range of what the age could be?
Yep.
So the minimum age could be.
Three years in one day.
Okay.
But the max is probably around 25. But they say there should be about a 25.
And you would just never
there.
Know? Or, is it, or I'm sorry, are you saying it's a blend of all these things?
So is it a blended whiskey?
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
And that's what blew me away too, because I was like, I actually thought that abenade was a blend because I knew there were crazy years in it.
Okay.
And actually the same went for, and I've been wrong
that
in the past.
That makes no sense. They can blend different years mm-hmm. and have it not be a blended whiskey.
Exactly. So, how? So another one that does that is Glenmorangie. They have their Signet expression.
Okay.
And it has like, what I've been told is there's like a 30 plus in there. So without it being blended, the rules for blended are this. So actually this is really good thing. Rules for blended really revolve around distilleries and mixing between distilleries, but this one is not mixed between distilleries. It's all their product.
Okay.
So that's one thing. They're not a mixture of distilleries, and they're all single malt. Every age barrel that went into the abenade was a single malt, meaning it was like 100% malted barley. And it never exchanged between distilleries, so it is still a single malt. So the opposite, I mean, single malt would be a blended there. And sure. Actually blendeds are typically like 90% of the Scotch market is what I've been told.
Really?
Yeah. Like, I mean, you, Johnny Walker.
Yeah.
Chivas Regal, for example. And, a good amount. Like, what's that other one? Like, Famous Grouse, stuff like that. A ton. And most people buy that cause it's actually the cheapest. But what blended Scotch is really when you mix two distilleries or mix a single malt with a grain whiskey, which would mean that it might not be 100% malted barley. You might even mix between, like a single malt and a single grain, or if it's a single grain between two distilleries. So there's a few rules, but really it comes down to multiple distilleries or, basically mixing what would be a non-single malt and a like a grain whiskey, which could have other grains besides barley, but it also definitely isn't just 100% malted barley.
So you've said a lot.
Yeah.
The main question I have,
mm-hmm.
and forgive me if you just answered this.
No, I can make it simple.
What is a single malt Scotch? Because that's what this is,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. No, yeah. So a single malt Scotch is just defined.
We kind of talked about like mm-hmm. that, like single malt. We talked about Irish whiskey being single malt. Mm-hmm. And you told me that this is different, even though this is also single malt.
Yeah. So it is similar. In terms of Irish whiskey, basically the big difference between single malt in Ireland and Scotland is they just have different rules between Irish whiskey is like this and Scotch is like this. Meanwhile, Scotch needs to be all aged in, all produced, aged, everything in Scotland.
Yeah.
So of course that is the, you know, the mutual disconnect. But in order to be a single malt Scotch, it needs to be from one distillery. And it needs to be at least, basically all the other rule is, besides the basic Scotch rules, it needs to be 100% malted barley.
Okay.
So that matches here, even though there is an age of about 25 in the mix.
It's very weird that like, this is a very weird whiskey to me.
Yeah, I was caught off guard too.
Because it sounds like a blended whiskey.
Yeah. And actually, I had been referring to it as a blended whiskey as along with Glenmorangie Signet until this week.
Really?
Because
you had this episode coming up.
Yeah. I mean, I had to do the research and I had to go back and forth on certain blogs and be like, wait a second, this one says it's got a blend of ages. Why isn't it a blended Scotch? And I look at the bottle and it says single malt Scotch whiskey. And I'm like, what's going on here? And I'm like, because they will do iterations. This is batch 52.
Okay.
And so I was like, maybe they used to do it blended, but now they're doing it single malt. But then I realized it's still a single malt, even if there are different ages in it. And the same would go for
that's really difficult for me to to wrap my head around.
I mean, well, because we're used to American whiskey where it's like you usually get that solid age statement and you don't want to mix like an older whiskey with a younger whiskey typically, which actually is a really good thought. Is there single barrel scotches? What do you think?
Wait, say that again. What?
Do you remember what single barrel means?
A bottle is coming one full barrel.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So did they do that with scotch?
I mean, they could, right?
They could, for sure. But it's really rare.
Really?
Which is really weird, because you'll get that all over the place in bourbon, or even rye sometimes.
Yeah.
But, there's only a few. And the big two are Glenfarclas and Balvenie. There's
Excuse
a few
me?
Others.
What did you just call me?
Yeah, no, I'm so sorry, sir. Yeah, Glenfarclas. Yeah, it's a good one. But
what
those are the big
two. Did you call my mother?
Yeah, I'm so sorry. But actually, do we mention that this is a cask strength?
No, I don't think we've said that yet.
So not only do they mix the casks. You
know, it's interesting because I guess I didn't even, I mean, obviously it can be, but I guess I didn't even think that scotch would be cask strength.
Yeah, you don't see it too often.
Yeah, it seems like kind of maybe rare is the wrong word, but an anomaly.
It's much more prevalent in the American whiskey realm.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's hot. I mean,
because us Americans, we like things to be, we like the extreme.
Yeah, yeah. We like to just go for records, basically.
Yeah.
But yeah, this.
What's the proof?
The proof on this is 120 or 121, so 60.5%.
Yeah.
So it's a little hot, and
this
I think they're up
this
to.
This might be the hottest whiskey I've had.
No.
Yeah, I think so.
No, you've had Oh wow, it might be.
I think this is the hottest.
Yeah. Well, we have coming up, we have William LaRue Weller, and that is 134, I believe.
Oh, yeah. That's definitely going to be the hottest.
It'll knock your socks off. It's good stuff.
Because, I mean, the Thomas H. Handy's not that hot, right?
It was probably rivaling 120 proof.
Yeah.
It might have
been
more.
Well, because to me, like, I know what we did 2 weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
the Knob Creek Cast Strength Rye, that's 119.6.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you beat it by, you know, a little over one.
Yeah.
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 But it's a good one. Remember we talked in previous episode about coloring?
Yes.
This has no coloring. It is actually that dark. And the biggest reason.
It is a really dark whiskey.
Yeah. Two big reasons is the cask strength, which, you know, you don't water it down. But then the other thing is they finish in Spanish Oloroso sherry butts.
Okay.
Yeah, I said butts. Yeah, but you can say cask. It's all the same.
Well, let's talk about the price of this and maybe the rarity as well. Like your average liquor store, are you going to be able to find this?
I would say not your average, but your nicer one in town, you'll probably be able to find it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So TotalWine.com has this going for about $82.39. Do you remember what you paid for yours?
Somewhere around there.
Okay. Yeah. So like we always say, give or take $10 or so.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes give or take 20.
Yeah.
So yeah, TotalWine.com is $82.39.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like we have here in Madison, there's limited quantity available in that. At that price range.
Yeah.
But again, your price may vary just depending on where you're at. It's so weird. You know, I was just looking again today at pictures of a liquor store in New York City.
Uh-huh.
And things like, you know, I've got two bottles of Colonel Taylor out there. One is a rye, one's a bourbon.
Mm-hmm.
And those bottles that I paid $64 and $40 for, respectively, for the rye and the bourbon.
Mm-hmm.
Those were going for like $200.
No.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I mean, it's nuts.
You know where one of the best cities I ever found reasonably priced whiskey was?
Where?
Boston.
Really?
I went to like five liquor stores and it was over Christmas and I had to ship all my whiskey back to where I was living because I got like 12 bottles.
Let me ask you this real quick. After this question, we're going to get into drinking this whiskey real quick. But I was thinking about, the secondary market this week.
Yeah.
Because I may be interested in getting rid of that Kentucky Owl bottle.
Yeah.
As much as it might pain me to do. But shipping that.
Yeah.
You know, you want a whiskey bottle to be upright because you don't want the cork to get ruined.
Not with new bottles so much.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, if it's an old bottle, don't worry about the cork. But these corks are sturdy. You just got to make sure that the cork is in.
Yes, but if it's a synthetic cork, you don't really worry about it.
No.
But a real cork, you do worry about that getting soaked because then it can come like off and go into the bottle and stuff.
There. Yeah. Oh, you mean like come off? Oh, I've never seen that issue.
Well, the bottle that I'm aging.
Oh, really?
Because I'm aging some Death's Door. Yeah. I put real corks in both at one point because the one bottle is a screw cap, and I could tell that it was getting darker than the other bottle.
Okay.
Because it was getting more oxygen because it's just a screw cap. Mm-hmm. The one bottle had a synthetic cork and it was sealed.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I just put real corks in both for a while and one cork got wet.
Yeah.
And it caused a bunch of flakage to go into the bottle.
Were those corks dry for a while?
Could be.
Yeah.
I mean, I got them from Amazon.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They came with the bottles that I bought eventually put the whiskey in.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. I mean, like typically my thing is if it was bottled like that, like they were shipped and moved that's around true. And everything but to get to where they are now. But
don't you think that the distillery is putting them on their trucks and saying, you know, this side up and make sure these are stayed this side up?
I would say so, but they're also, the liquid's really close to the cork typically, and you're driving in the truck typically that's to true. Ship whiskey. So I don't think if it's a brand new bottle, I wouldn't be worried. If it is a old bottle or it's half full or something like that and it like dries out or gets kind of like soaked up of the moisture of the evaporation, I'd be worried about that. But I really wouldn't worry too much about brand new corks getting too involved with the liquid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else you want to say just about Abalor or Abunad?
No, real quick, I don't think
before
so.
We get to drinking it.
I think I covered all the big stuff. It's really good.
I think it sounds pretty complex
to
understand what exactly is going into this whiskey, so I am looking forward to drinking it. Before we get into it, let's take another really quick break. All right, welcome back from break. Once again, we're going to be drinking the Abunad from the Abalor Distillery. And Cole, what do you say you pop that cork and pour us a couple of glasses of that?
Sounds good.
As I said, I am honestly really looking forward to tasting this because it sounds kind of complicated and complex and just like, I really don't know what to expect. Because again, it really sounds like a blended whiskey, but according oh, you poured a little too much, huh?
Yeah.
According to you, it's not a blended whiskey.
No, it's definitely not. Under the rules.
The rules of the whiskey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's blended ages, but it's not a blended scotch.
Oh, it definitely smells like a scotch.
Oh, yeah.
I'll tell you that much.
It smells scotchy. Yeah. So what I like, usually typically on the nose, I haven't smelled it yet, but it's very robust and dried apricots, maybe dried, maybe raisins.
Oh, I'm definitely, like I definitely smell raisins for sure. I don't necessarily sweet smell raisins. Apricots.
Mm-hmm. I'm almost getting a,
it's pretty nice, fruity though.
Are you getting a pear?
I didn't want to say pear again because we said pear last week.
But pear last time was a Irish.
Yes.
So. I like it a lot. What I really am impressed by with this one, and feel free to take a sip whenever you are, but I really like, actually I'll wait a little bit until you sip a little bit, but it is the most velvety texture of any liquor I've ever had. Would you nod in agreement a little bit? So yeah, what I like about this one is it's got a velvety mouthfeel and just a taste to it.
It's so velvety in your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
That it almost feels like there's nothing in your mouth.
Yeah,
I don't know if that makes any sense at all.
No, it does. It's almost like it's not impact. Like, you know, when you like spill oil on yourself or something like that, like you're cooking with olive oil.
Yeah.
You get a little on your, you don't even notice it's on you because it's like, it's just like the same kind of feel.
Yeah.
If you poured water, it would like feel that kind of different, like a wet, but like sometimes, I don't know if that makes any sense. But it's there, but it's not like overpowering you. It's just smooth.
You know, I get a, on the palate, I'm getting caramel a lot.
I'm trying to think. I'm getting a lot of raisins. Very strong raisins. And that sherry comes out, but it's not like the Glendronach 21 we have. The sherry and the raisins were a lot more powerful, I felt like, in the Glendronach 21.
Yeah.
This is just about the mouthfeel here.
You know, it's got a great color.
It does.
It really, like in the bottle, it's super dark. And then you put it in your glass, it's still pretty dark.
Dark but, amber. Yeah.
But it's just like, this is the color that whiskey is supposed to be.
Yeah. You know, like a nice little red there. Yeah. So the finish just continues. It's zero unpleasant, in my opinion. Like, sometimes with a finish, it can get a little sour here and there, or maybe just fade up to sour. This is a fantastic finish.
It lasts
for a while.
Ooh, it's got that.
I'm still getting pears on the palate as well.
That finish is just this warm.
Mm.
This is going to sound weird. It's like a warm cloud.
Yeah.
The finish. I mean, it's really...
You're just enveloped in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
It's like a nice blanket.
It's right up there with my favorite whiskey so far.
Really?
To be honest with you.
Favorite scotch or favorite whiskey?
Favorite whiskey.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It's super drinkable.
Yeah. And for a cask strength, it's not going to blow your face off either.
Yeah.
If you drink it wrong,
yeah. it'll kind of melt a little bit.
But. Yeah. But that's a good word, melt. Like when I sip it and even get the finish, it feels like it's like melting within me.
Yeah.
And not in a hot way, like in a just a very pleasing, almost caramely way, you know?
Well, I mean, if you drink it wrong, it's going to melt your face.
Mm.
But you are right. Drink it right.
Yeah.
And it's like putting a perfectly cooked piece of meat in your mouth that just kind of melts.
You nailed it. Could you imagine like a really well cooked steak with this?
Yeah, like a little bit of fat on the steak.
Oh, exactly.
And meat, and it just melts in your mouth. That is actually the feeling. That is the mouth feeling with this.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. And that nice little fatty, it's like almost so oily, but very pleasant.
You know, this is the first whiskey that I am not looking forward to putting an ice cube in.
Yeah.
This is a whiskey that is meant to be had warm.
I'm intrigued to find out. I've never had this with ice. So
right, well, I'm going to go for an ice cube here.
Yeah, while you reach, I'm going
to... I always have to be careful with the ice because I have to cross a computer.
Oh, yeah,
as
true.
I'm reaching for ice. But I'll put that ice in there and kind of let it cool it down before I, smell it again.
Yeah. So on the nose, well, I haven't given it enough time.
You know, it's I just started learning about, you know, our name is Chill Filtered, our podcast.
Yep.
And non-chill filtered is widely considered, and I have learned recently, it may just be hype, but non-chill filtered whiskeys are considered, you know, the better whiskey.
I mean, think about it. It's like uncut, unfiltered. There's nothing preventing.
I know. I'm just telling you that people have said that it may just be hype.
No. I'm in agreement, but like you think about why that sounds good.
But I can tell, I'm pretty sure this is non-chill filtered.
Oh, man.
Because when you put that ice in there, it gets cloudy.
Yeah.
And so, that's the sign that it would be non-chill filtered.
Did we talk about the correction to my talking about chill filtering?
I don't remember.
I'll have to explain it next time. It's kind of a cool process, but it doesn't just have to do with particulates.
We can probably talk about it at the end of this episode if you want.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna give it a smell here.
Yeah. So my smell, I already did smell it, and it like brightened it up.
Oh, yeah.
Very more potent in a good way, not in a bad way. Like very much more bright. It amplified everything.
It's much more caramely to me.
Yeah, let me smell that. I'm getting, everything. I mean, I'm getting a lot of the same notes, but they're all amplified, which is really interesting. And
maybe maple. I'm almost getting like maple syrup.
Whoa. I think you nailed a good one there. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm going to go for
the syrup. Not quite what I call the buttermilk pancake smell or taste, but I'm definitely getting a maple syrup kind of smell. I haven't tasted it yet.
It's a really pleasant palate.
All right, well, I got
it. It is lighter, and with 60.5%, when you cut it with a little water, being the melted ice, it can really change it in a brighter way, and I think it's brighter. I prefer it neat,
you know,
but
what's
not
interesting,
by much.
Mm. With the ice in it, it's more noticeable that it's in your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't just feel like it's just a part of you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It is noticeable that it's there.
Yeah.
But it doesn't make it any less drinkable.
Yeah. There's as opposed to the neat, there's a slight, but not really unpleasant bitterness at the end on the finish.
I don't have bitterness.
I'm getting a tiny bit.
I have a little bit more bite, just in general.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense.
I can see it.
Maybe we're talking about the same thing in the finish, because that's where I'm finding it, is there's a little bit
right
more
at the
bite
end.
In the finish.
It's definitely not velvety.
No, yeah, not at all.
The Velvety left the scene with the ice.
The Velvet has left the building.
Velvis.
Velvis. Someday when we are loaded.
Yeah.
And I don't mean with alcohol.
Yeah.
With
yeah.
money. We're gonna open a distillery.
Yeah.
And we're gonna have a whiskey called Velvis.
It'll be a mixture between like a Kentucky bourbon and like an Abelor, basically.
No, it's a Tennessee whiskey.
You're right.
Isn't Elvis from Tennessee?
Yeah, he's from Memphis or something like that. Yeah. It's gotta be a Tennessee whiskey. Okay, so we'll mix something like Jack Daniels with something like Abelor, and it'll be Velvis.
I mean, I guess we'll have to be located in Tennessee.
Not true.
I
don't know. The big difference is the charcoal filtering.
Oh, sure.
But I don't think anyone outside of Tennessee really claims they have Tennessee
whiskey. I am now really getting maple syrup. Now that I've really gotten it cold.
Yeah, mine's completely melted, but I'm definitely getting some maple syrup. And it's, you know.
It's so crazy that we can pull that out of oak.
Yeah, just aging. And, you know, just the esters, as they say.
The esters. Mm-hmm. What is the esters?
So the esters are something that really comes out when you age whiskey. So there's chemical reactions that are happening. And esters are
tannins?
They are involved. But the esters are specifically...
tannins always make me think of?
The Royal Tannenbaums?
No, it makes me think of Buford Tannen from Back to the Future 3 when they go back to the Old West.
Never seen it.
And now that I have been into whiskey, I understand why he is Buford Tannen.
Why is that?
Because it's about whiskey. Like, he was a whiskey drinker. Like,
oh, I didn't know that.
Like, the Old West, like, stereotype of the old cowboy that always ordered whiskey. I'm just guessing...
It might be.
...that his last name Tannen was about... whiskey.
Yeah. I mean, you typically get tannins a lot more with a wine, but you do get it with whiskey here and there.
I almost said the F word again, but I'm really trying not to on the podcast.
Stink on anymore. You, Cole. Yeah.
Stink you, Cole. You were saying something about tannins and the other things.
We'll talk about it another time because it's a really cool chemical process, and I would love to make sure I know each word because there's some really cool chemical words. But esters can be really responsible typically in like a bourbon for that vanilla and that caramel. I mean, that stuff doesn't just come out of the wood. It's like a chemical reaction, which is really cool, especially with the charred wood. It's pretty cool. But I like this one a lot.
Here's what I'll say. Mm-hmm. If you're going to put an ice cube in this, you need to drink it fast because the longer that it's starting to get more to that lukewarm thing once it's been cold, it's not as good.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, that velvetiness is something to be said, and it does go away with the ice. So in the future, I'm really not going to be drinking it with ice just because I really love that texture.
I could do a half ounce with ice and just like chill with it. Or maybe an ounce and chill with it. Like a good ice cube. Because the ice that we used was already half melted.
Yeah.
If we had a good cube that was meant for a glass of whiskey, could probably hang with it.
Yeah. So here's a cool thought. I know people that are all about 100 proof. I know people that are all about like 80 to 90 proof.
Mm-hmm.
You're a cast strength kind of guy.
Oh, yeah.
It's a good thing.
The closer I am to 120 or above, I've enjoyed it more.
There's a punch to the face.
There is an exception to the rule, and that's been the E.H. Taylor
100 proofs
rye that I've had. I have the E.H. Taylor...
Small batch
bourbon, and I haven't even tasted it yet. I haven't even opened the bottle yet.
Good stuff.
But that rye that I have from them is really good.
Oh, absolutely.
But no, like, you know, the Knob Creek cask strength, like we said, 119.6 proof.
Yeah.
Pretty much anything else that's been close to that proofage.
I mean, you tried the William LaRue. Like,
It's all been really good. I'm looking forward to that LaRue. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I'm still open to the thought that there are, lesser proofs that I'm going to be impressed by.
Yeah.
You know, obviously.
Oh, absolutely.
So what are you giving this as a ranking?
You know, I forget what I gave Glendronach 21, but I actually do prefer Glendronach 21 a little bit more.
Was Glendronach actually on the podcast, or was that one of the last episodes?
No, that was one of ours.
Okay.
Glendronach 21 was. Okay. The 18 was on a pre-podcast.
I swear to God, I'm going to put those up on Patreon. So if you want to hear those, you become a Patreon member.
They're kind of fun. They're different, you know, and you'll be the only ones who get them.
You know what'll be interesting? Have you listened to any of those recently?
No.
We should go back and just listen.
We should.
Yeah, just together, so just to kind of figure out. Anyway, what do you say? What are you going to give a ranking on this?
I'm going to give it an 8.7.
I'm going to give it a 9.
Nice.
I like that.
Hey, this, if it's your second favorite so far.
This is really good.
Yeah. And it's $82.
That's not bad.
That's fantastic.
That's not bad at all. Yeah.
And we have, so at the liquor store I work at, we do not have batch 52 because this was bought in 2015. 3 years later, you're going to find, I believe, somewhere in the 60s nowadays.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The batches. What was the scotch you said that you use it to make somebody a scotch drinker, a scotch fan?
Oh, Glendronach 18.
That was the 18, yeah, mm-hmm. You said, or was it the 21?
I mean, 21, you don't want to pour someone's first drink at 21 always, sure. You know, but you don't want to like blow their mind and then be like, all right, from here on, you're going to get less than this.
I would use this, but again, maybe that's just because you know that I like a hotter whiskey.
It's good. You need to prep them to not, you know, get that cough by probably doing that method, you know?
That's the thing is that this is not, I don't think scotch should be somebody's first foray into whiskey at all.
I don't either.
This, you can get somebody into whiskey and into other things, or into whiskey with other types of whiskey and then introduce them to this.
Yeah.
This is an amazing whiskey.
Oh, yeah.
It's so good.
Yeah. And for that price, man.
Yeah. I'm really impressed. I would take a bottle at any point in my life.
Yeah.
it was really good.
Oh, it's good stuff.
So you said 8.7. I say 9.
Yep.
So again, listeners, if you want to get a taste of the Abalor Abunad, you can get it for around $80, maybe $90 or so. It's not going to break your... It's not going to break your bank if you're into whiskey. Hey, Cole, you know what time it is?
Is it time for Whiskey World News?
It's time for Whiskey World News. All right, listeners, and Cole.
That's me.
Once again, it's time for Whiskey World News, the segment of Chill Filtered where we take an article from somewhere online that's about whiskey and we read it to you, and Cole and I will then discuss it. So I always want to be sure that our listeners know these are not things that we have written. Yep. They're not original to us. I always want to give credit to the people who have written them and where they're coming from. So this article is coming from Forbes.com.
Interesting.
Written by Larry Olmsted. And this is going to kind of relate to a little bit to what we're drinking next week. Next week, Cole, do you know what we're drinking?
Oh, we're drinking Jack Daniel's Tennessee whiskey. Jack
Daniel's.
Old we've number mentioned 7. It
a couple times. I think we'll probably have to have some Coke here on hand.
Yeah, just add to it.
Just to maybe, you know, give it the best shot it can.
Yeah, give it a great...
Give it what it's good for.
The old college try, as they say.
I can't remember the last time I've had Jack Daniel's straight.
I had it once, and it had its good, and, you know.
It'll be interesting. When's the last time you had it straight?
It was 2015 or 16.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I mean, you've only been into whiskey for 3 years.
3 to 4, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've been drinking whiskey longer than that. Yeah. I just haven't been into it in the same caliber you have.
Yeah.
Probably the last time I had it straight was, let's see, I'm 31. I was probably 22.
Wow.
Yeah. And I was bet that I couldn't do a straight shot of Jack Daniel's.
And you like finished the bottle or something, didn't you?
No, I think you're confusing me with somebody else. Oh, that was...
another story.
That was a time... So straight, maybe 7 years ago.
Yeah.
No, I finished a bottle of Jack Daniel's by myself, a 750 by myself in one night.
In the shower?
No, we don't have to get into this. But no, one of the first times I had it straight by myself, I was about 21, 22, and I was bet that I couldn't do a shot of Jack Daniel's straight.
Really?
Yeah. And, you know, at 22, I'm like, I've been drinking for a year so far. Yeah. I know what I'm doing, blah, blah, blah. And I'm at a friend's house where it's a party. And I said, just go in and pour me a shot. So they come out, and I'm drunk.
Yeah.
I'm drunk at this point.
Three sheets in.
Yeah, I've had a lot of beer at this point, and I said, go get me a shot. I'll do this, no problem. I'm outside having a cigarette, and they come outside and hand me the shot glass, and I take it, and I just throw it back, swallow it, and kind of look at them, and I go, that was soy sauce. And they're like, yes, it was.
Oh, there you go.
And did a shot of soy sauce. And then they all laughed and thought it was great. And I said, can you get me the shot of Jack Daniel's now so I can show you that I can do that?
Yeah. And they're like, sure, whatever.
Yeah. So, I've had a relationship with Jack Daniels. Nice. I have had,
Jack was my first whiskey.
I know you told me that. So again, that's what we're drinking next week, but, we're running up really close on time, so we're going to try and make this quick. Again, this is on Forbes.com, written by Larry Olmsted. The article name is Big Whiskey News, All New Jack Daniels Hits Shelves Worldwide. The food and drink industry has long been filled with unscrupulous types of who misrepresent, relabel, and adulterate products for their personal ill-gotten gain. Unfortunately, this is still true today. I wrote an entire book about it that became a New York Times bestseller. Okay, Larry, you're trying to sell your book now.
Pretty big deal over here.
The book is called Real Food, Fake Food, Why You Don't Know What You're Eating and What You Can Do About It. But when it comes to whiskey, this kind of deception was much worse back in the days when Jack Daniels started making his famous Tennessee whiskey. At the time, store owners would bottle their own whiskeys from barrels they bought from distilleries, and a lot like
store picks.
These MGPs are doing.
Oh, gotcha.
But that too as well, store picks as well. Along the way, this spirit would often be cut with unknown liquids, sometimes dyed to match the color of the whiskey. So maybe not so much what I was talking about. Mm-hmm. This is why eventually it became a law about things, what whiskey is.
Federal law, yeah.
So in 1895, Daniel made the then revolutionary decision to create his own reliable brand and bottle it himself, and to guarantee consumers knew what they were getting. He chose the now instantly recognizable square bottle, which is honest. There's a lot of companies now, a lot of distilleries that are bottling a whiskey and mimic that square bottle to try and make you think it's Jack Daniels. Have you seen some of those?
Yeah, just a few.
I couldn't name the brands off the top of my head, and we don't have to. Mm-hmm. But I sometimes will walk through a liquor store and go, oh, that's Jack. Oh, nope, that's just a bottle that's trying to be Jack. 2 years later, the federal government realized Jack was onto something and enacted the Bottled in Bond Act. This was a voluntary label certification that distillers could get to advertise the guaranteed unadulterated nature of their products to consumers. And since 1897, it has been only available to domestically produced spirits. To qualify, the whiskey must be produced of a single distillation season. There are two of these annually, but many whiskeys combine multiple years at a single distillery. It can only be bottled at 100 proof and then must age for a minimum of 4 years in a federally bonded warehouse under government supervision. Only after meeting all these criteria can the product be labeled bottled in bond. Back in 1897, the most important part was the storage under lock and key by the feds, and the agents would actually take up residence at warehouses to prevent tampering.
Yep.
These days, they are a bit more trusting about fencing off an area and padlocking it, but the other rules all apply. I'm going to skip a little bit about the bottle and bond because I think maybe on the next episode with Jack Daniels, maybe we can get into a little bit more of the history of what bottled and bond is. Yeah. We can talk about that.
Even though I don't believe Jack is bottled and bond.
Yeah, I don't think it is anymore.
Yeah, or 80 proof.
But I think this is saying that it was at one point.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Jack Daniels is jumping on the bandwagon, and having just tasted a review sample, I'm glad they did. It's a bargain. It's better than the standard black label. I'm more of a gentleman Jack fan myself, with a fuller richness, and I generally prefer adding a little water to bring down the heat and strength of the higher proof. I think you get a deeper experience. But even at full strength, it is unusually smooth, thanks in part to a distinctive charcoal filtering process required by law to be called a Tennessee whiskey. This is the extra step beyond the rules for making bourbon, which otherwise matches the way Jack is made, from mostly corn and aged in new American oak barrels. But the charcoal filtering is a real and a good thing. And what is especially significant is that this new product seems to be the only bottled and bond Tennessee whiskey on the market. So it sounds like now Jack Daniels is producing a bottled and bond Tennessee whiskey.
There aren't many there aren't many Tennessee whiskeys out there.
No, there's not.
There's like
Is Evan Williams a Tennessee whiskey?
I think Dickel's the other big one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Here's what I'll say about Jack. And we'll talk about this a little bit more next week.
Mm-hmm.
Jack Daniel's is probably the most recognized whiskey in the world.
Yeah. Or at least
I think it's fair to say it is probably the most recognized whiskey in the world.
I mostly agree. But I don't know how big American whiskey is out in China.
Let me ask you this.
Mm-hmm.
If you're shooting a movie and you want to show somebody who's a drunk who likes whiskey, what are you putting in their hand?
Put one of those jugs with the finger hole in it?
No. You're putting a square bottle of Jack Daniel's
in it. Yeah, you got me there. Yeah.
It is probably the most recognizable whiskey in the world.
Okay. Recognizable. Yeah, you know.
And so here's what I'll say about that.
Mm-hmm.
They might catch a bad rap for being, you know, a chill filtered, what I would maybe call a fast food whiskey.
Yeah.
But they're trying something here.
Yes. Yeah.
They are willing to look and see, hey, these other distillers are trying something and people are kind of gravitating towards this.
Yeah.
Can we do something to, you know, obviously for them, it's about the market share. Yeah. Can we do something to grab a bit of that market share? But it's also, can we do something to be different?
Yeah.
Can we do something that is not just the same thing that we do every time?
And I respect that. I'll believe it when I see it in terms of like how good it is. And I'm not actually like knowing if I tasted it in the future, I wouldn't be so maybe going in with already my mind made up. I would really give that one a shot. They put out a single barrel rye recently in the past few years, and it was really interesting. Really interesting.
I've seen it actually a couple times.
Yeah.
And it's I'm interested in it.
Super different
so
in
a good this, way. This in new a way, whiskey you know? That this article is talking about is the Jack Daniel's Tennessee Whiskey Bottled and Bond.
Is it out yet?
I didn't see whether or not. The bad news is it's only going to be sold in duty-free shops.
Oh, come on.
Where it will be available worldwide starting this week, August 1st. So that was
time again
past week.
Duty.
Yeah. The upside is that you'll get a full liter of it instead of a 750. And the higher proof and suggested, the suggested retail price is $37. For a liter of
yeah, I'd pay for that.
Which is not bad.
No.
But again, you have to go to a duty-free shop, which is
it'll be
basically
a
an airport.
Yeah.
So it'll be hard to find. I wonder what it'll be when it hits the secondary market.
Yeah.
True. I'd be interested to try it.
Absolutely.
Obviously, we're not going to have it for us next week.
Yeah.
But I would love to be able to try it at some point.
Yeah.
Again, listeners, today we drank from Abelor the Abunad single malt scotch, which was just
fantastic.
Heavenly.
Yep.
It was so good. Next week on Chill Filtered, we'll be drinking Jack Daniel's Tennessee Whiskey, just your average Jack that you can buy off the shelf. We'll probably just buy a couple of shooters because I don't need a bottle of Jack in my collection at this point.
Nah.
But you know, if you want to buy a 750, I think you're looking at about $35, maybe 30.
Really?
Is that too
high? I think
it's
like less than 20.
Really?
Or about 20.
No.
It's Jack Daniel's.
You talk for a second here.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where, and here's the thing. I really do like it with Coke, and I feel good about it because it is, the price is just about, wait for it. Yeah, I'm going to guess like 21.
My computer's going slow.
Yeah. Just when we need it.
But no, I agree. I think in Coke, it is about the best you can do with whiskey.
And you don't feel bad about yourself where you're like,
of course.
I'm putting, you know. Oh, there it is. Second one. Second row.
$20.99.
Nailed it. Okay, didn't I say 21?
I don't remember what you said. I think you said less than 20 is what you said.
The first I did, but then I was like, I think it's probably about 21.
Yeah, 21. I don't know why I'm thinking like $35. I guess I'm just way off here.
No, it's all good.
But yeah, so if you want to buy a 750 of it, it's $20.99. Cole and I are going to go spend $5 on maybe two or three shooters of it, just because we want to be able to taste it. It's been years for us that we've ever tasted it just straight.
Yeah.
This is now the longest episode of Chill Filtered we have ever had.
Nice.
But I had fun today. Did you?
I did too.
Did you, Cole?
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for sharing this whiskey of yours. It was really delicious. And listeners, I hope that you can taste it and realize how delicious the Abunad from Abelor is.
Mm-hmm.
But most of all, Cole and I both hope
yep.
that our love of spirits
lifted yours.